If you would open your Bibles to chapter 5, we're going to continue where we've left off in our study of Paul's letter to the church at Ephesus. Thinking a little bit about time this morning. Ephesians chapter 5. We'll be looking at verses 15 and 17 for most of our lesson this morning. Let's jump down there. Look carefully then how you walk. That's what we've been talking about, the Christian walk. Not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of the time, because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. Verse 16, making the best use of the time, in other translations says redeeming the time. And that's what I want to think about today. Time is a fascinating and a mysterious thing. I got a phone call yesterday from an old friend. I think only probably mom and dad who were on would know Jerry Curry. He's preached for a long time in the northern Alabama area. And he's at a congregation called New Georgia, which is in Anderson, Alabama. And he invited me to speak at a winter series they're having this coming in January. Jerry's son Ben and I were good friends back in high school, so we kind of caught up a little bit. How is he and his family? And he was asking about my kids, and he said at the end of all, he said, it seems like you and Ben should be going to get in your car and go ride around, in his mind we ought to still be at that age, is what he's saying. But what's strange is now we have kids that are the age that we were when we were, so we've kind of all replaced our parents in that sense. We're at the age they were when we were at that age, and it's strange. And this is a universal experience that you hear it all the time. Every day, or just about, somebody will say something like, "Can you believe it's been however many years?" Or doesn't that seem like, wow? It's time is such a strange thing to us. And I started thinking about that. It's a little bit strange how strange it is, because it's all we've ever known. From the moment we were aware, from the moment we, were conscious, we've existed in time, and it's as regular and steady and predictable as the sun rising and setting. And yet, we're kind of constantly perplexed by it, which is interesting. Why does it seem kind of foreign to us? And I thought of this verse in Ecclesiastes. It says, he has made everything beautiful in its time, and he has put eternity into man's heart, yet so that he cannot find out what God has done from beginning to end. What does it mean that God put eternity in our hearts? I'm not sure I understand that. I'm pretty confident I don't. But it makes me wonder if we were designed and intended to exist in an eternal state, and yet we find ourselves here in a existence where there's this thing of time that marches on, and there's beginnings and endings, and we're kind of constantly trying to grapple with that and understand it. And we do recognize that since time only moves in one direction, we kind of realize days come one at a time, and after they pass, we can't go back to them. And that, leads to observations like this one: four things you can't get back, the stone after it's thrown, the word after it's said, the occasion after it's missed, the time after it's gone. We all recognize that, you miss that opportunity, it may not ever come again, but you miss that time and it's gone. Well, if we waste a day, that day you can't get it back to do something else with it. It's this steady march of time kind of in one direction. And that calls for wisdom on our part, especially as we walk this Christian life. And that's what Paul says here: look carefully as you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of the time. So recognizing that at least in this life that we have, we're stuck in this world that moves through what we call time, and these moments come and go, and it challenges us to use wisdom to make the best use of what we call time, to redeem it, to use it for God So I want to think about that this morning. What are some ways that we could misuse time? And what are some ways that we can use it wisely? As we think about misusing time, I think the idea of tomorrow and how we think about that, if we think about it in the wrong kind of way, it can lead to three misuses of time. And that's what I want to think about first. And then we'll look at three ways that we can use time wisely. So one way that we could misuse time by how we think about tomorrow is in overindulgence. As we think about tomorrow, if we have the attitude that Paul says, if there's no resurrection of the dead, then we might as well eat and drink for tomorrow we die. That attitude says, it's sort of like the, you don't hear this as much anymore, but for a while there, everybody was saying, you only live once, you know. But that attitude of, hey, you only live once means I might as well, I'm only going to pass this way one time. I might as well suck every bit of enjoyment out of it that I can and do whatever is fun and whatever makes me feel good, because who knows what tomorrow holds. So let's just do whatever that is enjoyable. And that's the worldly way of looking at it. And Paul recognizes that you know, we can all relate to that. He says, we ourselves were once foolish, disobedient, led astray, slaves to various passions and pleasures, passing our days in malice and envy, hated by others and hating one another. This sort of selfish, self-indulgent view of life that who knows what tomorrow holds, so today I'm going to do whatever I feel like doing, I'm going to do whatever makes me feel good, and I'm going to get as much of that as I can, leads to to excessive consumption, to excessive feeding of my appetites, to drunkenness, to a very selfish worldview. And you can read about in Ecclesiastes someone who says, I'm going to try that and see how that works out. He said, I didn't withhold from myself any pleasure. Anything that was good, I did as much of it as I could. And he found at the end of all that, it was emptiness and vanity. It didn't lead to anything good. So imagine if you pass your days this way, you know, and when people do spend a period of their time that way, how do they look back on it? A lot of times, frankly and ironically, they can't remember large portions of it. I've read interviews with rock stars that you know, like the Steven Tyler, the lead singer for Aerosmith, talks about he didn't really enjoy the 80s. Well, I thought they had big hits in the 80s, but he doesn't remember like a big chunk of the 80s. You know, he was so in another place that he doesn't even have a recollection of whole years of his life. What would be the point of being that successful and having that much fame and all that if when you look back on it, you can't even recall it? But even on a smaller level, you know, what would be the point of going out with your friends on a weekend when you don't even know what you did when the weekend is over because, you know, of this overindulgence? What a waste of time. What a waste of days to spend them just totally focused on self. And this can be a particular problem when we've been blessed with an abundance. You'll remember the man, the farmer that had more than he needed, and he said in Luke 12, I will say to my soul, soul, you have ample goods laid up for many days. Eat and drink and be merry. And so, you know, but God said to him that night, fool, this night your soul is required of you. He assumed there's going to be a long list of days, and I've got so much stuff that all I need to do today is just focus on me. And I'm just going to eat and drink and be merry because the future is bright and long. And that's another bad thought about time, that it's going to just keep on going, so I might as well do whatever I want to do. In Isaiah 56, they say, come, let me get wine, let us fill ourselves with strong drink. Tomorrow will be like today, great beyond measure. It's never going to end. Tomorrow's going to be another good day. Let's just enjoy ourselves as much as we want. Billy Joel sang a song, only the good die young. And the idea is, hey, you might as well live life and enjoy it while you can. Don't worry about it. You've got plenty of time. You know, you're young. You don't have to worry about anything bad happening to you. This is the time for you to just enjoy as much as you can. But that kind of selfish, self-centered view of life is not spending our time wisely, and it doesn't lead to glorifying God or to doing what he would want us to do. Another mistake about time, and this is related to that, is to not give any thought to preparing and to just think like, well, I'll do whatever I need to do, but I'll do it tomorrow. There's always going to be time later to do what needs to be done. So today, I'm just going to do nothing. because I can do that tomorrow. And that attitude leads to laziness, of course. And you'll recall the instruction in the Proverbs to look to the ant. And this is addressed to a sluggard, which is not a word we use very much, but it's a lazy person. Go to the ant, O sluggard, consider her ways and be wise. Without having any chief or officer or ruler, she prepares her bread in the summer and harvests her food in the harvest, gathers her food in the harvest. How long will you lie there, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. And want, well, poverty will come upon you like a robber, and want like an armed man. This idea, this misuse of tomorrow is to think tomorrow's the better day for doing what needs to be done. Tomorrow is always going to be there, and tomorrow I will work on this job. Tomorrow I will do what needs, I'll do those things. That's always going to be, but then we can kind of just keep pushing things off. And that's this idea of the ants, they're working today, and when tomorrow comes, they're going to have something ready. But the idea that I don't need to work today, I've got everything, I'm set right at the moment, I'm fine. Well, tomorrow's going to come one way or the other, and it's going to find us unprepared if we don't use the today wisely. So that's another misuse of tomorrow. And it's the same thing that Paul talks about in the New Testament when he talks about idleness. He writes to the Christians in Thessalonica, and he says, even when we were with you, we would give you this command, if anyone's not willing to work, let him not eat. For we hear that there are some among you who walk in idleness, not busy at work, but busy bodies. Now, such persons we command and encourage in the Lord Jesus Christ to do their work quietly and earn their own living. I like that little wordplay in the English. I don't know if it's the same wordplay in the original or not, but in 11, not busy at work, but busy bodies. A busy body, it doesn't necessarily mean being lazy. It doesn't necessarily mean laying around all the time. It could just be busy doing something other than working. Like a busybody is busy getting into everybody's business and is busy talking, busy, you know, but they're not actually being productive. They're not accomplishing anything. And he says, we hear that you got this problem there. And people need to realize, if you want to eat, you got to work. You can't just be lazy. The Lord doesn't want lazy Christians. He wants us to be, to the extent that we're able, to be active and to be working and to be productive. So it would be a misuse of our time to just let days pass by without using them in any productive way. Now, another thing about time that's strange is, what if we became afraid of tomorrow? Recognizing that tomorrow is coming one way or the other, if the world continues to stand and if we continue to live, what might happen tomorrow? Maybe tomorrow something bad will happen. Maybe tomorrow things won't go well. We recognize that time is somewhat out of our control. We can't stop it or, you know, slow it down. And we also recognize that things are out of our control to a large degree. And that can be a source of anxiety and worry. And that's not a good use of today, worrying and fretting and being anxious about tomorrow. And Jesus tells us that in the Sermon on the Mount. He said, don't be anxious, saying, what do we eat or what do we drink or what shall we wear? The Gentiles seek things. Your heavenly Father knows you need them. God's watching over you. He's going to take care of you. Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. That's what you have control over. Today, seek his kingdom. And all these things will be added to you. The necessities of life, that'll be taken care of. Therefore, do not be anxious about tomorrow, for tomorrow will be anxious for itself. Sufficient for the day is its own trouble. So it would not be a good use of my time today to just pass the opportunities of things I could be doing now by being busy fretting about what may or may not happen tomorrow or in the future. I looked up there's an article in Psychology Today on this, and the I think this is the opening line of it. Worrying is one of the most futile and purposeless things that people can do. Unless your worry can tangibly help you identify solutions you can implement to avoid or prevent a negative outcome, worry is often something people do to feel as though they're being productive when really they're only creating more distress for themselves. That's kind of a long way of saying what Jesus says in the same passage of Matthew 6. He says, which one of you by taking thought can add a single hour to his life? So this this effort that you're putting into it, is it productive? Is it accomplishing something? Is it solving a problem? Is it preparing or planning? Or is it just simply energy that's spent churning and thinking and being anxious that is not producing a result? And the problem with all that is it can become paralyzing. We can become so afraid that we actually don't do today what we're supposed to do today because we're afraid. And you hear this a little bit. I forgot I had this one too. Worries are a total waste of time. It doesn't change anything. All it does is steal your joy and keeps you very busy doing nothing. And that reminds me of the one talent man when he was called to give an account, and he didn't have anything to show for his talent the Lord had left with him. He had this excuse. Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you scattered no seed. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here you have what is yours. And of course the master answers, you wicked and slothful servant. What was his problem? Taking him at his word, he was afraid of failure. He was afraid, what if I try and it doesn't go well? What if I do something and then he's mad at me? What if I do this and it doesn't turn out in a good way? The best thing I can do is just to do nothing, because then I can't possibly fail. He was wrong about that. Doing nothing is to fail as well. The do nothing option does not lead to success. He thought he would be safe. He'd be playing it safe. I mean, just taking him at his word, he was doing this because he was afraid if he did something, he wouldn't be successful. He would, you know, the master would be hard on him and would be harsh. So that kind of like, if we worry and fear and then we don't do anything, that's not going to lead to success. What we need to do is take action, seek first the kingdom, and don't let fear or anxiety about tomorrow prevent me from doing what I can do now, at this moment, at this time. And so those are three things I think kind of improper attitudes about tomorrow and how they can cause us to misuse the time that we have at the moment. And as I was thinking about those, I thought about the ideas themselves are not necessarily bad. It's when we give in to them and become slaves to them. So our appetites are given to us for a reason. In fact, we're told in Ecclesiastes, there's nothing better for a man that he should eat and drink and take pleasure in his toil. There is satisfaction in that. That is a good thing. To enjoy a good meal is fine. What happens when we become overly indulgent in that, when we become slaves to that, when we decide to spend all of our time in that? Then it becomes gluttony, drunkenness, you know, being given to those appetites. They're not meant to be something we overindulge in. Rest is a good thing. Being able to relax, kick back. In fact, the Lord told his people, he forced them to take a day off every week and just rest and think about him. And so it's good to rest. It's good to relax. It's good to recreate. But again, what if we become overindulgent in that? What if that's all we want to do is kick back and all we want to do is be entertained and all we want to do is be on the phone or on the TV or on whatever, and we spend tons of time? So it's a matter of keeping these things in balance, it seems to me. There is a place for rest. There is a place for relaxation. We just can't let that become what our life is about, because that would be wasting the time that we have. And as we think about the future, you know, I think when Jesus said, take no thought for tomorrow, he was speaking in hyperbole. Because clearly we are to make plans, and even the ant, you know, she worked today, so she'd have something later, and we can consider our options and count the cost and prepare. That's productive. But given into that, to taking that perhaps to an extreme where we chew up all of our time today with a concern and thought that isn't leading to something productive, just fretting and worrying is where that becomes counterproductive and unhelpful. And so I think those things have their place, and then they have their downside when we overindulge, when we give in to that maybe what is a natural kind of thing. So how can we use our time wisely? So don't use your time unwisely. Just thinking about you know, this steady march of time, how can we make use of the opportunity? I wanted to present these three ideas as we conclude. First of all, do good. Let us not grow weary in well-doing, for in due season we will reap if we do not give up. So then, as we have opportunity, Let us do good to all, to everyone, especially those at the household of faith, as we have opportunity. This presents an interesting picture that as you're going through life, these opportunities present themselves. Like the Samaritan Jesus talked about. He's walking down the road and there he passes a guy that's injured. You know, he has there's the opportunity. Okay, what am I going to do? And as we said in that, or as we saw in that earlier slide, there's things that don't come back, that you can't get back. And one of them is an opportunity when it's gone. So the opportunity presents itself, and then it's gone. You wake up tomorrow, and that opportunity's come and gone. What did you do with it? And so as we have opportunity, as the opportunity presents itself, do good. Look for those things. This is a good use of our time. As you go through your day today and you see opportunities, take advantage of those and make something of them. And then you're not wasting your time. You're doing what you can do in the moment now. You're doing good to people. Another thing that the same instruction about making the best use of the time is also in Paul's letter to the Colossians. Walk in wisdom toward outsiders, making the best use of the time. It's the same idea as in our passage in Ephesians, making the best use of the time, redeeming the time. And then he goes on to say, let your speech always be gracious, seasoned with salt, so you may know how to answer, how you ought to answer each person. So in this case, the instruction, walk in wisdom, again, wisdom in our walk, walk in wisdom as it comes to the time. And then I don't know if this is like tied together with that next statement. It seems like they fit pretty well together. And that is, you're going to have opportunities to interact with people. Outsiders, you're going to have opportunities to interact with brethren, but it seems like he's thinking about outsiders here. And as your day-to-day comes along, think about what you say. You know, he says in our passage, walk circumspectly, or you know, give thought to how you conduct yourself. Think about what you're going to say. Let your speech be always gracious, seasoned with salt. That doesn't just happen accidentally. That happens intentionally when we make it a point to think about the words we say to people. So as we interact with people along the way, one way that we can make the best use of the time is by seeing opportunities to speak a word that will give grace to the hearer, to speak words that are true, that are needed, that are helpful, that are encouraging, that are admonishing. That's not always easy. But if we take advantage of those opportunities to say what needs to be said, to say it in the right way, to say it in love, to say it out of concern, to say it with grace, then we're making the best use of the time that we're presented, and we're being a blessing, and God will work through us in the lives of those that we come in contact with on a day-to-day basis. That's something we can do to make the best use of the time. Back to our passage, if you're still there in Ephesians 5, let's continue on. And notice the next thing that he says in our passage. Verse 21. Well, I was looking at chapter 4. That's why it didn't look right. Verse 17. Let's pick up there. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. And do not get drunk with wine, for that is debauchery. But be filled with the Spirit, addressing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody to the Lord with your heart, giving thanks always and for everything to God the Father in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, submitting to one another out of reverence for Christ. That kind of finishes the paragraph. But notice the contrast here. And again, it is a contrast between the very first thing I talked about in terms of wasting time, being self-indulgent, and so the Gentile way of life is, well, you only live once. Who knows what will happen tomorrow, so let's have as much fun as we can. He says, nah, that's debauchery. Don't fill yourself with alcohol. Don't be drunk on wine. But instead, fill yourself with the Spirit. And if we fill ourselves with the Spirit, then he will have an effect on us. Just like alcohol has an effect on somebody. And when they are filled with alcohol, it affects their the way they talk. It affects the way they behave. It affects the way they walk, literally. If they're filled with alcohol, it it affects them. In the same way, Christians, so you got the worldly guy over here, he's stumbling around, saying things he wouldn't normally say, acting in ways he shouldn't act, doing things he shouldn't do. He's under the influence. We are supposed to be under the influence of the Spirit. Instead of being filled with wine, be filled with the Spirit. And when you think about what would the effect of that be, it'll affect the way you walk in the spiritual sense that we're talking about. The way you live your life, it will affect the way you talk. It will affect the way you treat people. If we are filled with the Spirit, then what's going to be coming out of our mouths are songs and hymns and spiritual songs, singing, making melody in our hearts, giving thanks to the Lord, speaking with grace. It'll just flow out of us because we're filled with the Spirit. So how do we fill ourselves with the Spirit? Well, through His Word, through prayer, through meditation, through study and growing and eating and spiritually having a good diet of spiritual things. And if we do that, then He will guide our steps. And we can then know that as we pass through our days, we speak to people with grace. We see somebody needs help, we help them. And man, what a way to spend a day. If you, of course, working and doing all things you're supposed to do, but along the way, if we are guided by the Spirit, then we are a blessing and we are reflecting God's glory and we're accomplishing the purpose for which He made us, which is to glorify Him. And then at the end of the day, if we've done those things, that was a good day. It wasn't wasted. We could feel good about that day. And at the end of the day, if we have done those things, if we have walked in His way, we have no reason to fear tomorrow. We have no reason to worry about tomorrow. What's there to worry about? If we're walking in His way and we're trusting God to take care of us and we're doing what He wants us to do, then we can look forward to tomorrow, another opportunity to do the same, and the ultimate tomorrow when we go to be with Him forever. So we're given each of us these days one by one, and today here we are in this odd thing of time. We're all together at this moment in time. We're sitting here in the same room. Our paths have crossed yet again, or we're connected via the cables running across the countryside. We're all sharing this moment. And this moment won't come back. It'll be gone. We'll move on to another moment. But what the Lord wants us to do is use each moment the best we can. And if there is something that you need to do to make things right in your life, as Jesus said, if you're going to the altar and you remember that your brother has, stop what you're doing and go make that right. There's things that have to become an immediate priority. And one of those things is making things right with someone else, making things right with God. And if there is something and you know it and you've been kicking that down the road, that's another one of those faulty ideas about tomorrow, putting it off. Don't put it off. All we really know we have is right now. We have this moment. So we want to use this moment to make ourselves right with God. If there's any way that we can help you do that, please let us know as we stand and sing.